Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. It is after week one now. We have officially opened the season. So it's an exciting time, and we've got Dave Serrano and Joe Healy here to talk about all the action with us. How's it going, guys?
Good, Teddy.
Going great, Teddy.
All right. So it was an exciting weekend. It was just good to have college baseball back, period. We have a new top 25 over at baseballamerica.com. You can check it out there. Frankly, though, it is largely unchanged from the preseason top 25. So if you're familiar with that, you're going to be mostly familiar with this week's. The top 10 is unchanged completely. It's all chalk. The top 10 teams in the country combined to lose a total of two games. So they all remain where they're at. So again, that's Vanderbilt, number one, LSU, number two, number three, UCLA, number four, Florida, number five, North Carolina. Outside the top 10, a few changes. We have East Carolina moving up to 11, trading places with Louisville at number 12. The Cardinals, one of the few teams, one of the few favorites this weekend that lost a series. They lost to UConn down in Florida in Lakeland. Further down, we had Arkansas trading spots with Auburn. Arkansas coming out of the gate pretty well, and Auburn had a tough test at home with Georgia Southern, got pushed to extra innings a couple times, so they flip at 17 and 18. And then we had one team enter the top 25, that is TCU. The Horned Frogs had a really nice weekend, the MLB 4 tournament at Talking Stick in Arizona, and it included a win against number one Vanderbilt. So they both finished the weekend 2-1, and the Frogs enter the rankings at number 24. Minnesota, which did not have such a great weekend at their tournament in Arizona, losing a couple games, they fall out of the poll. So there is the top 25 rundown. Everyone in the top 10, like I mentioned, had winning weekends, but that doesn't mean there isn't some interest among that group. So Dave, I know you got a chance to see Vanderbilt, over at Salt River Fields, a Talking Stick in the MLB 4 tournament. Just what were your thoughts coming away with the number one team in the country?
Well, they did disappoint me for sure. Obviously, they lost the game to TCU, but they're going to be an offensive juggernaut. Their lineup is loaded. It's balanced. Led by JJ Blade. It looks like it's going to be a tough lineup to get through throughout the season. Now, we all know offense comes and goes. I think the biggest question mark for Tim Corbin and his coaching staff and Coach Brown is settling the pitching. And I think from afar, if you're a Vanderbilt team ranked number one with the star power they have, even though they put up big numbers offensively, I think they walk away with a little bit of concern that they need to get the numbers down from the pitching standpoint. And I believe they have the tools to get it done. I think it's just settling in to who's going to be in what roles and how they're going to use guys out of the bullpen to get that cleared up. Obviously, they're going to want more of the Drake Fellows. I thought Patrick Raby for five innings looked good against Cal State Fullerton. He does what he does. He throws strikes, has great command with his fastball. And then, I don't want to hold it against the young man. He comes with high accolades, Kumar Rocker, but he struggled in his first collegiate outing, and that's normal. That's normal for most guys. But Teddy, you got a better view of him. I think the stuff is there. The command wasn't probably what he wants. It wasn't like he was overly wild, I guess. He was missing not badly, but they're going to want more out of him. And I think the bullpen's going to need to step up and do better. They have the guys to do it from the mound. They're going to need to do it because that offense is going to give them a ton of run production. They've just got to hold the opponents down.
It was hard to walk away not impressed with the offense. They really put up a bunch of runs the first couple of days, but the pitching, they had big leads in a couple of games, and they just, let Virginia and Fullerton kind of hang around and keep the game somewhat close in those two wins. And then they give up 10 runs to TCU on Sunday, and Drake Fellows came out and he was okay on Friday night. He'll get better. Tim Corbin kind of attributed that to opening night jitters. That game was on MLB Network. There's a lot going on with that game. And then Patrick Raby was solid. Kumar Rocker was not. But like you said, college debut, we'll see what he's got from there. And, you know, I'm sure he'll get it straightened out. But that is something to watch going forward. They have a few weeks, you know, before SEC play starts to kind of figure this all out, to figure out how everything fits best together. But that is something that Vanderbilt needs to do moving forward.
So the thing I walked away with, Teddy, on that was the fact that it was weekend one, and I'm sure there's a lot of other coaches around the country that have a lot bigger concerns than Tim Corbin does with the players he has at Vanderbilt to get right. But the thing I was really impressed with was the physical size of their team. I mean, it's a big team. It's a big physical team, and it showed with the power numbers. That was a Talking Sticks wasn't a small ballpark, and they made it look like a small ballpark at times with some of the balls they were driving in the gaps and over the fence. So they're going to put up some big offensive power numbers, especially point when they play at home and in some of the SEC ballparks.
Absolutely. That's one of the deeper lineups in the country, and they definitely showed it this weekend. Austin Martin, J.J. Bleda, Cooper Davis kind of has gone under the radar, but he came out swinging at the top of the order. They just have so many options. Vanderbilt, you know, it's a tough loss on Sunday. I don't think anyone's going to be too concerned about it. Honestly, Tim Corbin might like that happened. I mean, I know he hates to lose more than almost anyone, but that maybe will refocus the Commodores, you know, let them know that there are things that they need to do to get better as they move forward. Joe, out west, we had another kind of traditional pitching team that did a lot better on the mound, maybe, and you know, UCLA coming in at number three. They swept St. John's, and they really needed to kind of prove it on the mound because that's where they're young, but that they did a pretty good job of that this weekend.
Yeah, the first thing we kind of heard about this team going into the weekend is they were going to be without Ryan Garcia, and that was obviously a cause for concern given that pitching was really where we had questions with this UCLA team. And they quickly proved that those fears were a little bit unfounded, at least for this weekend. And now they did get a good test from St. John's in the Friday game, trailing 2-0 late, came back, scored three runs late, were able to come out with that 3-2 win, but then they outscored St. John's 20-1 over the next 2 days. I think I saw where their pitching actually on the Friday game, their pitching staff didn't, none of those runs were earned. The one run they allowed later in the weekend was not they, so they no earned runs yet allowed by the pitching staff. So that's pretty impressive stuff there. Jack Ralston was incredible in his start, 6 innings, shutout baseball, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Jesse Bergen pitched on Sunday, did a solid job as well. And of course, Zach Pettway, you kind of know what you're going to get with him backing up what he did last season. So kind of thought that was going to be a more competitive series. And on Friday, it looked for all the world like it would be that. And UCLA did what a team that is as good as UCLA is kind of should have done with that series. You know, St. John's hung around a little bit, proved that they could play with UCLA a little bit. But then ultimately, I think depth and talent won out throughout the weekend. And UCLA ended up with what is essentially an emphatic series sweep offensively. Some of the usual suspects, Chase Strumpf had a big weekend, but I like with their offense that they got some big games from guys who aren't in that core of, you know, Idens and Toglia and Strumpf. They got a big game from Garrett Mitchell. They got a big game from Ryan Kreidler. So they're mixing it up a little bit offensively and showing that they have multiple dimensions to them, and it's not just the usual suspects that can get it done on that side. This coming weekend, they've got a series with Georgia Tech, and we'll obviously have an opportunity to talk about what's coming up a little bit more another time. But I think it's key because there's a little bit of a difference between facing the St. John's offense, which that's the side of the ball for St. John's that we have more concerns about. St. John's was a team that the three of us debated a little bit for top 25 coming into the season, but ultimately the lack of returners on offense and the lack of certainty on offense was the biggest reason why we didn't end up having them ranked. And so knowing that, you go into the series with Georgia Tech, and that is what we feel pretty good about with Georgia Tech, is kind of that they will be able to score some runs in bunches as they seemingly always do. So I'm really interested to see how UCLA handles a road series, first of all, but then going to Georgia Tech, and how does their pitching handle that type of series against a more physical offense than what St. John's provided. So for this weekend, came away really impressed with the Bruins. I think that's exactly what we needed to see from them there was, you know, St. John's was going to be able to compete on some level, but ultimately UCLA just kind of boat raced in the last 2 days. And I just found that incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I mean, to score 20 runs the last 2 days against that St. John's pitching staff, I think is loud because, I mean, we knew UCLA was going to hit, but I really thought St. John's was going to pitch a little bit better than this. And, I still think the Red Storm are a really good team. And I think that this is going to be a pretty loud series win going forward for UCLA. It might not really appear that way right now. And, people might think that the Georgia Tech series will be even better ultimately, but this St. John's series is going to be one that people look back on when we're starting to, debate seed order for the hosts. I think this one will fare favorably for the Bruins.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, we see this with St. John's every year. I mean, look, this is the reality of them being a Northeastern team. A lot of times they're not going to come out of the gate firing on all cylinders, but they are almost always playing their best baseball in May and then in June in the years they get that far. So I think this is a series that even though they got swept, I think the experience they got here and also the way we look at it will kind of age like a fine wine. I think we're going to find, obviously, that UCLA is going to be a national title contender throughout the season, and that I don't think this is really any sort of indictment of St. John's. They're still a class of the Big East. That pitching staff, yes, guys like Jeff Belich really did struggle quite a bit, but I think we're fairly confident that that pitching staff is going to be able to get them through the Big East with minimal incident, if you will. So, yeah, not any sort of indictment at all in St. John's. Just more impressive that UCLA was really able to turn the second half of that series, into kind of a runaway.
Absolutely. Sticking in the pack, we got. I got to see Oregon State here in Arizona. They, as they usually do, open the season with a tournament and surprise. And on opening day, the defending champs were down late to New Mexico before they were able to come back with a walk-off win. And then they kind of rode that momentum the rest of the weekend to a couple big wins against Gonzaga and Minnesota. So Oregon State opens at 3-0. Watching that opening day game, it was New Mexico is a much improved team than they were a year ago, and they had a really nice pitcher in Justin Slayton, who has now 2 years in a row given Oregon State some fits here in this tournament. But once, I don't know how much of this was nerves. I imagine there was a fair amount of that for Oregon State. Just so many players in that lineup were new, and there's been so much attention on them, and opening day on top of that. I think once they got past that, once they were able to get that walk-off win, I imagine that kind of relaxed them. And, their lineup really went to work over the next couple of days, and Adley Rutschman hit an absolute mammoth home run against Gonzaga, almost clears the stadium completely in surprise. And, just as they get going, the Beavers, as their offense gets going, I think that it can be pretty dangerous. And obviously it starts with guys like Rutschman, but, Bo Phillip and Jake Dukart, two newcomers, sandwiching him in the lineup, can be pretty effective as well. And getting them going is going to be important. And, as expected, Oregon State pitched pretty well. Kevin Abel was a little shaky on Friday night. He'll get better. He'll settle in. But Bryce Femmel went out, did what he does on Saturday, and pretty much the rest of the pitching staff fell in line as well. They still have a game to go here. They're playing Monday. They're throwing Grant Gambrell. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Gambrell does. That's a guy who came in with some acclaim. He hasn't quite put it all together yet. And if he can, that really, makes their rotation that much better. So it's going to be interesting to watch him here early in the season where they're playing four-game weekends, how he does and how Sam Tweet does, who started yesterday on Sunday against Minnesota, as they kind of try and, nail down that final rotation spot. But the Beavers' bullpen, still exceptionally good. Jake Mahalan, Brandon Isert, Christian Chamberlain, all doing well out of the gate. And so they can really shorten games if they need to as well. So, I had some concerns about Oregon State coming into this. On Friday afternoon, I was kind of wondering a little bit more as, they were trailing New Mexico going into the ninth inning. But, they over the last couple of days, they've really done a good job of settling in. And, it's going to be a growing process for a lot of these young Beaver hitters especially. But I think they're moving in the right direction, and you saw progress throughout the weekend here in Arizona for Oregon State. Now, as we continue through the top 25, like I said, we have one new team in the rankings, and that is TCU. And Dave, you got a chance to see TCU, to spend some time around the Frogs. What did you think of them this weekend?
Well, it was interesting, Teddy, because obviously I'm very close. I'm a lifelong friend of Bill Mosiello, and I'm Kirk Sarlos's former coach, so I'm pretty close to them, and Jim Schlossnagel and I have a good relationship. So I probably have a little bit more inside information on them than most teams, and I had heard their what they liked about this team, and I'd heard what their concerns were. Their concerns were they were going to have five JC guys in the lineup. You don't know which way they're going to go, and I think it was a concern of ours too. I mean, when we went through the top 25 and we were going through it, we talked about that. We talked about their struggles last year due to some injuries. Their offense really struggled last year. And how were they going to – what was the new facelift going to look like with the influx of JC players? And I think they got some answers. I walked away. Austin Henry, I think, is going to be a very, very good offensive player, a JC transfer from Walter State. I was very impressed with him. He came up late in the game in the 2-0 deficit against Cal State Fullerton in the first and second and took a ball – to right center warning track that almost gave them the lead, which could have led to a victory. But I think he's going to be a good player. He struggled in game one with some base running mistakes, but those kind of things will be fixed by Coach Mosiello and his offense. Jake Ginther, I think, is going to be a good player for them, a transfer out of Sacramento City. I think those are two guys they're going to look to add to some offense. Hunter Wolf, another transfer from Walter State, their shortstop. Maybe not known as the offensive guy, but he's going to give them a real threat on the bases. He can really run the bases, and I expect him to have big numbers the way Coach Mosiello runs his offense with so many of the aggressiveness with the base stealing attempts. The guy I really walked away impressed with, even though all those guys, is a freshman named Porter Brown, left-handed hitting. He's DH-ing for him right now because he's having some struggles defensively, but really loose hands. He's in their leadoff spot. But he has power in there. And in a year or so or a couple of years, I think that's a player that a lot of people in college baseball are going to be talking about. I'm really impressed by him. I think he's going to be a really good player. They got a great balance of left and right throughout their lineup. I think it's going to take some time. And I heard Coach Schlossnagel say that. Their team now isn't what their team's going to be down the line. And I agree with him on that. I think once these guys get some experience underneath them, I think they're going to need, even though Nick Lodola didn't throw a bad game in game one where they lost 2-0 to Fullerton, I think they're going to need a little bit more dominance out of him, especially out of his secondary stuff. His fastball is 91, 93, jumping out of his hand, didn't show many changeups, and when he did, they weren't what he wants them to be. And his breaking ball, every breaking ball he threw in that game was touched at least. There was no swing throughs on it, and they're going to need a little different Nick Lodola on Friday night. Kudos to Jared Janczak, coming back after an injury, having surgery in May, getting a start on Saturday, and going 4-plus innings. I think he looks sharp. He's a little bit different pitcher than he was prior to the injury, but I think his savviness and his experience will allow him to be successful in that spot, and that guy's had a lot of success behind him. And I didn't get a chance to see him. You saw him, but obviously Brandon Williamson, a JC transfer, had a very good start on Sunday against Vanderbilt, which I think will be a key to their success, because I think their bullpen has a great balance of left-right with some good arms that I think when it's all said and done, we'll be talking about TCU at the end of the year like goes on most times throughout the past few seasons.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, those JC kids, Williamson on Sunday and the bats that you mentioned, that they did a very good job. You know, there's so many new faces at TCU right now, and, you know, they just weren't able to kind of get that big clutch hit on Friday night against Fullerton, and they wind up losing, 2-0. But the bats really, you know, found their stride over the next couple of days, and I thought that it was big for them to bounce back and have those wins, because, you know, given what happened last year, you know, even if a lot of those guys weren't there, they still want to be able to, you know, put that behind them and get some positive momentum going right away. And I don't know what does that, you know, better than beating the number one team in the country 10-2 on Sunday. That should make for a pretty happy flight back to Fort Worth. And, you know, it's important that the TCU gets off to a solid start, because their schedule is not easy in the early going. They're on the road an awful lot. They're home this weekend, but that's their only home weekend in the first month of the season. So, you know, they kind of need to build some momentum, and I think that's what happened out here in Arizona this weekend.
Well, in their opening game loss, the 2-0 loss to Cal State Fullerton, they had close to 20 base runners. So it wasn't about their offense. It was about executing with runners in scoring position. And I think that was the thing that killed them. They made some base running mistakes. They made some bad decisions on the bases. But it wasn't about they didn't have any offense. They just didn't score the runs when they had guys in scoring position.
Yes, and can't beat two-out hitting. Over in the Big 12, you know, sticking with the Big 12, rather, it was kind of an eventful weekend there, Joe. I mean, we had Texas Tech stumbling out of the gate before finding its stride against Oregon. Baylor swept Holy Cross, but catcher Shea Langeliers broke his hamate. He's going to be out for a few weeks. Texas had a solid weekend. Oklahoma State looked a little shaky with Rio Grande Valley. You know, Joe, you did the Big 12 preview. What are your thoughts, and did anything materially change, you know, in regards to your take on the race there?
So yes and no, I guess. I mean, the pecking order, I think, is relatively unchanged, because I think what we saw, I think, largely reaffirmed some of what we felt good about and some of what we had concerns about with certain teams. You know, with Tech, I mean, that was just such a bizarre series, and I guess they're going to, by the time you listen to this, we might know a little bit more because they're finishing up on Monday. But
that is not happening. It is too cold in Lubbock today.
Okay, well, there we go. Breaking news in the podcast. You heard it here first. Well, you probably didn't hear it here first, but anyway, you heard it here now. So just a weird weekend overall. So, you know, the first 10 innings could not have gone worse for Texas Tech. I suppose they could have, but it would have been hard to be worse. I mean, they lost that opening game. They just got blitzed by the Oregon offense, and they're down 8-0 in the first inning in game two. And then there was like a second half of the series where they come back on Oregon, they win that second game, and then they have a much smaller comeback on Sunday, but a comeback nonetheless to win that series. So it ends up being a pretty solid weekend by and large. But I think it reaffirms maybe some of the concerns we had about them. We talked a lot in the preseason about how they've got talent on the pitching staff. It's just how do you piece those together and how confident are you in them? And that was where they faltered this weekend. It wasn't an offense thing necessarily. I mean, we saw that on Saturday with their ability to kind of come back and get off the mat and fight. And I think that was the positive of this from their standpoint, is like they didn't just roll over on that. They fought back from 8-0 down in the first inning, which is a hard thing to do mentally, I assume, you know, as much as physically. So I think that was all positive. You know, is there concern on the pitching still? Yes, those questions aren't obviously going to go away. But I don't know that it changes kind of the viewpoint I had on them coming into the season, which is like there might be some growing pains here and there might be just a lot of fluid pieces moving around early in the season. But with the level of talent they have, and they can just throw big arm after big arm after big arm at you, you know, I just have a decent amount of confidence they're going to figure it out. It's not that much different than what they kind of faced last year, and they ended up obviously figuring that out. So, you know, I still like them at the top. And then Baylor, you know, losing Langeliers is huge. And I think probably defensively as much as offensively, because offensively, one of their biggest strengths is their offensive depth. And we saw that over the weekend where, you know, Davion Downey has a big game in the last game of the series. Richard Cunningham had a 5-for-5 game. Davis Wenzel had a big game. There was a 3-for-4 game from Ryan Bertelsmann, who I'd never heard of until I saw it in the box score. So they're getting contributions in a big way from guys who weren't even a part of kind of the preseason calculus that we made where we ended up ranking them so high. So I think that's something they can withstand, at least offensively. Now, defensively remains to be seen how much the opposition is going to be able to take advantage of that. But I think they're going to be okay for the time being. And so, you know, his loss hurts, but I do think they are equipped to kind of deal with that. Texas was incredibly impressive, and then of course TCU showed well. We've talked about them a lot already, but Texas goes down to Lafayette. That's a raucous crowd. Gunnar Leger is back on the mound, which kind of whipped fans into even more of a frenzy, and they withstood all that, and they won a couple of tough games in the first 2 days of the weekend before, you know, almost mounting a comeback and winning the last one. But they showed quite a bit. So if anything, so that was my no, it hasn't changed the pecking order. My yes is that I think those four teams are maybe a little bit closer bunched than we even thought. You know, TCU obviously jumped in the rankings. I think Texas, we were a little bit leery of them because of the injury to David Hamilton and some of their own concerns on the mound. But hello, Bryce Elder. You know, he starts on Friday night and is absolutely outstanding. Outduels Gunnar Leger. So I think maybe it's a situation where those teams are probably, I'd rank them the way we have them ranked, but at the same time, I don't know that there's as much of a gap between Tech and TCU, for example. So it was a strange weekend in the Big 12. There was a lot of stuff happening, but I don't know that I would really shake things up from where we have them now or where we had them in the preseason. I don't know that all that much changed in terms of that. But I think we were probably underselling TCU a little bit, given what we've already seen, and then maybe even Texas a little bit. Maybe we thought that the injury to David Hamilton maybe would be a little bit of a bigger deal, and so we bumped him down a little bit. But maybe they'll kind of overcome that, and that remains to be seen, of course. So, just an eventful weekend, but I don't know that it was anything that really changed any sort of pre-existing beliefs I had about the league.
Yeah, I think that all makes a lot of sense. The Langoliers injury is kind of scary because hamates are things that linger. Like, he'll be back in probably a month, maybe at most you would think 6 weeks. He being a catcher, you know, sometimes it takes them a little longer just because the way they need their hands. But it's going to linger in that, you know, his power may or may not come back this season for Baylor now. And, you know, what's that lineup going to be like if he's less of a power threat? I don't know what it's going to be. I think in the time that he's out, you know, this weekend they have Cornell, then they go to the Shriners Classic in Houston, and then they're at Nebraska, and then they have Cal Poly and all of that before they start Big 12 play. So he may even be back for Big 12 play, but so they can weather it until then for sure. But I'm just more interested in seeing what he's like when he's back, because those final couple months of the season, it would really behoove Baylor if they had Langoliers at full strength. And the sooner he's able to get back to that, not just to get in the lineup, but to get that bat back to where it can be, is big for them. And, you know, from a draft perspective, too, I mean, this happened to Nick Madrigal last year, basically the same point in the season. He still winds up going fourth overall, but he's a little bit different of a hitter in that you knew Nick Madrigal wasn't going to hit 10 bombs for you. That was never the plan. That was never what scouts were expecting. So Langoliers, it being a little bit different kind of a hitter, I don't think it's going to affect him too much from a draft perspective, but it is something to watch, especially in terms of how much the power comes back and how quickly that happens. But the Big 12 race, definitely going to be an exciting one. And I think you're right, Joe. I think it is coming. I think these teams are maybe a little closer than we had thought coming into the year.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State too. I think they kind of just confirmed what we talked about in the preseason. We weren't quite sure what to do with them. You like the talent. You like that they overachieved last year, although that can be the other side of that coin, which is that regression to the mean is kind of inevitable. So I just continue to not be quite sure what to do there. You know, they had the struggles they had this weekend, but at the same time, you know, talent typically wins out, and I think everyone agrees on the talent in place there. So, but they do have the weaknesses they have. I mean, the strikeouts continue to be a little bit of a concern and an issue. And, I think there was hope that maybe those would get cut down and they'd be a little more contact oriented. But sometimes, you know, hitters just are who they are. So we'll see. But, your guess is as good as mine on what Oklahoma State ends up being. I would believe any sort of range of outcomes for their season.
We will see where the Cowboys go from here. We mentioned early on that pretty much everyone that was favored won their series. There were a few exceptions, and Louisville was one of those exceptions. You know, I think UConn had the biggest upset of the weekend, knocking off Louisville down in Lakeland, Florida. And the way that UConn did it was rather impressive. Of course, as a Northeastern program, the Huskies don't have the ability to get outside as much as some other teams. I know Louisville thinks of themselves as a little bit of a northern program as well, but their weather is vastly superior to what they get up in Storrs, Connecticut. So UConn had only been outside twice before opening weekend, and Jim Penders told me that one of those practices may or may not have actually helped any. It was pretty icy still on the turf field they were on. But just they wanted to get them outside to see the ball against the sky. So they were able to do that twice, which is, you know, about par for the course, or maybe even a little extra than usual for UConn. So they're used to that aspect of it. But they were without ace Mason Fioli, you know, an All-American at the front of the rotation. He's dealing with a little bit of a triceps strain here and is still kind of building up. And so they were without him this weekend, but it didn't matter. UConn plugged Jeff Karstens into the Friday spot, and He beat Louisville 3-2 on Friday. Louisville came back with a nice solid win on Saturday, and then UConn grabbed the rubber game with an 8-3 win on Sunday in a game that they pretty much bullpened. It was very much a group effort on the pitching side. And on the hitting side, they scored their first six runs all with two outs. And we talked about how TCU wasn't able to come up with the clutch hit against Fullerton on Friday night. And that proved to be the difference here for UConn was just two-out hitting and being able to find those key hits. Louisville wasn't, and so UConn comes through with a win, a series win, that's really going to resonate. You know, UConn put themselves kind of on the cusp of the top 25 with that. If we'd had a little bit more, if this was a week with a little more turnover, UConn very easily could have found themselves ranked this week. And I think that we will see UConn eventually into the top 25. They were a team that we were kind of talking about potentially as a top 25 team. They were a little further on the outside than they are now coming into the season. But with what they did this weekend, that was really loud. Again, they're going to get better because they're going to get Fioli back, and that's only going to help the pitching staff line up better. When you have Fioli and Karsten, the front of the rotation, those are two experienced guys. Karsten's a senior. And then they have a big-time closer, Jake Wallace, at the back end of the bullpen to come shut things down. And the offense, Jim Pender's told me he thinks it's a little bit deeper than it usually is. And, so that's exciting. And the fact that they were able to handle a really, really good Louisville pitching staff this weekend to put up some runs, that was encouraging for them. And it's only going to help them now moving forward. Of course, because they're UConn, they don't get to go home for a while. So it's still going to be a tough road ahead. They play some tough opponents coming up. This weekend, they're at College of Charleston, which won't be quite as hard as Louisville, but that's still a talented, quality program. And going on the road there won't be easy. So it's not going to be an easy first couple months of the season for UConn, but I think just the way that they started, the statement that they made, that was very loud. And ECU had looked at them as being the clear-cut favorite in the American, and I still think East Carolina is that, but I do think that just the way UConn played and the experience they have in that program, the Huskies are going to be able to push the Pirates once they get into conference play. So those are several of the main stories coming out of this opening weekend. We still have a few more that we want to touch on here. A little bit quicker. Florida State threw an opening day no-hitter, combined no-hitter. Three guys, starting with Drew Parrish, combined it to no-hit Maine in an 11-0 victory. Of course, this is Mike Martin's 40th and final season as head coach of the Noles, and he has an opening day to remember from his last season for sure. They've never done anything like this in his time. Obviously, they've had no-hitters, but not opening day no-hitters. And it was a really nice start to the year for Florida State. They opened 4-0, sweeping Maine there at home. Dave, I want to look at the no-hitter aspect of this, though. What goes through managing a combined no-hitter? I mean, obviously no one's more experienced than 11 in college baseball, but what goes through the aspects of trying to manage a combined no-hitter, especially on opening day, when Drew Parrish is on a more limited pitch count than he normally would be?
Well, it's not easy to do. Fortunately, through my career, I've been part of three no-hitters. Kirk Sarlos, when we were at Cal State Fullerton, which was later in the season, and his pitch count was down like it usually was when Kirk pitched for us. And Glenn Swanson, when I was at UC Irvine, a young man that was as sick as a dog prior to the start of the game. We almost didn't pitch him, and sure enough, he goes out and throws a no-hitter complete game. The only combined one I've ever been part of was with Team USA, and that's when Sonny Gray, Kyle Winkler, who's currently helping out at TCU, and Noe Ramirez, both Noe and Sonny are in the big leagues right now, combined for a no-hitter with Team USA. But that was already structured on how they were going to pitch during that game, as they usually do with Team USA. I have been part of other ones where no-hitters have gone in the seventh, eighth inning, where you're worried about a guy's pitch count, and sure enough, you're kind of, without taking away a selfish record for someone, you're kind of hoping maybe a hit happens so you can make that easy decision. But it's tough. It's difficult. I mean, I can't even imagine what was going through Coach Martin's mind. It's opening day. his last season of a storied career, and this guy's got a no-no, and he's got to make a tough decision on when to get him out of the game, because it wasn't about opening day and this no-hitter. It's about the longevity of a 56-game schedule in the postseason that you want this young man to be healthy. So it is difficult. It's very difficult to be part of. It's special to be part of, but you always got to put first and foremost the health of the pitcher, and that's obviously what they did in this situation. But kudos to them. What a special way to start 11's final year at Florida State.
No doubt. Maybe that's a good omen for the Noles, and I would appreciate that because they are my national championship pick. So we'll see. We'll watch this story as it develops. Sticking in Florida, Joe, kind of on the flip side of this, Stetson, a super regional team from a year ago, the Cinderella story for the Hatters. We thought they were going to be pretty good this season. I still think they are, but they're 0-3 after getting swept in their home, their own tournament. By Virginia Tech, 5-0 on opening day with Mitchell Sainer on the mound, their Team USA ace. And then they also lost to Manhattan and then Sam Houston State. Joe, what do you make of the Hatters opening weekend?
Yeah, it was tough for them. I think the first thing is to have proper perspective on this. And that's, it was going to be asking a lot for anyone at this level, any Atlantic Sun team, to kind of replicate what they did in last season. So that was never the expectation. So you have to kind of look at through that lens. But still, this is the favorite in the Atlantic Sun, and they still could get to that point. It's important to note. But it is kind of concerning, especially offensively. This was still going to be a pitching first team. And for the most part, they did pitch well. Mitchell Sainer wasn't perfect, and he walked 5 in his 4 1/3 innings. That was kind of the primary culprit of his issues there. But otherwise, he had 8 strikeouts. He allowed 1 hit in that 4 1/3 innings. So, as long as he comes into subsequent weekends with a little bit better control, you have to figure that stuff will kind of get smoothed out there. But Robbie Pito was good in his start. Ryan Stark was good in his start. Chris Gonzalez was good out of the bullpen. So the pitching was really, for the most part, there. It was just the offensive part of it, and that's where we always knew was going to be more of a struggle. I've been kind of bullish on their offense overall, being maybe a little bit more physical this season, but that wasn't the case in opening weekend. They hit 167 as a team, just slugged 219, four extra base hits on the weekend, 3 walks and a triple. So that is kind of concerning. Now, if you want to look at kind of a silver lining on this, it's that a lot of the guys who had the most struggles opening weekend are some of the guys you're probably most confident are going to bounce back from that. Jorge Arenas, just 1-for-10 on the weekend. Jonathan Miola, 1-for-10 on the weekend. Andrew McNeil, 0-for-12. And those are 3 guys who you kind of know what you're going to get from them. So you figure water's going to find its level on those guys. So we'll kind of keep watching it, but certainly it doesn't look great just from the standpoint of, we were concerned about how productive they'd be from an offensive standpoint. And then they went out this weekend and hit just 167 as a club. Now, the other side of that is that, first of all, we know what Sam Houston State is. I mean, they've got a stable of arms that, as good as just about any of the mid-major level. A lot of those guys, could pitch successfully the Power 5 level. They're draftable guys. So you know that they're going to pitch well. And so the struggles against them are one thing. And Virginia Tech might be better than we've been giving them credit for. So 2 of those 3 teams might end up being bad losses by the end of the season. And we'll see what Manhattan ends up being. So, maybe it's one of those things where when you take into account the way they arrived at 0-3, and potentially the level of competition, that it's not as bad as it seems right now. But with that being said, like I said, it is a little bit scary that the biggest concern ended up being a huge, huge problem for them over the opening weekend.
Yeah, and I feel bad in some respects, but they did this to themselves with the year they had last year. If Stetson starts 0-3 in most seasons, that's not going to be particularly noticed outside of DeLand. But when you make the jump that they did last year and have the year that they did, and then look like a team that should be back in the tournament again this year, and you come out and this is the way you start your season at home, it does kind of raise an eyebrow. And so it'll be interesting to watch how they correct from this and move forward. But I do think that the competition level is better than that might just appear on paper. Sam definitely looks like a regional caliber team again. And John Scheff, in his second year at Virginia Tech now, does seem to have the Hokies moving in the right direction, at least on opening weekend. Down in Starkville, Mississippi, the new duty Noble Field finally fully opened. Last year was kind of a soft opening, but now it's completely done. The pictures and video that came out of there Definitely lived up to what the renderings had been for so long on that $55 million facility. Mississippi State rolled through Youngstown State. The Penguins did not put up much of a fight after hanging tough with the Bulldogs for about six innings, maybe seven innings on Friday night. And then after that, the floodgates really opened for Mississippi State. Dave, I don't think that we learned anything about the Bulldogs this weekend, but they had a nice weekend and they have this stadium open. And I know that everyone in college baseball has been watching this stadium project over the last few years. Just how fun is it now that this is open? And then looking ahead, Mississippi State this weekend has Southern Miss, and they are going to be tested much more in the weekend ahead.
Well, first and foremost, I let's look at the stadium situation. I've been fortunate enough through my career to be there a few times, and it was an unbelievable atmosphere before to go into, with wonderful people, wonderful fan support, true lovers of college baseball. In fact, when you kind of look over the times of college baseball, I'd say Mississippi State fan base kind of started what college baseball has at many of these big programs now. And I can't even imagine what the new dude is like now. I'm anxious to get there and see it. It looks beautiful from all the pictures. But kudos to all those people because they deserve it. Like I said, that fan base is rabid. They're wonderful support of that program. And I agree. I think we're going to get a little bit better test this weekend against Southern Miss. Obviously, Mississippi State is a story program. I believe they like what they have. They've got some good young players and a returning mix. I'm excited to see what happens this weekend. But I believe Mississippi State's going to be in the mix of the SEC like they are each and every year. And the new stadium's only going to help them year in and year out recruit more players to that story program.
Absolutely. Sticking in the SEC, Joe, you got a chance to look at what is a new look Kentucky. They also have a new stadium, but they did not open the year in it. That opening day for the new ballpark in Lexington still to come. But from what you saw as they went and won their series against Austin Peay, again, not maybe the best competition, but they were on the road. And this is a very different looking Kentucky team than it was a year ago. So what were your impressions coming away from the Wildcats?
Well, I talked to Nick Mingione and I asked him, what would it take for this team to be a postseason team again? And he quickly, the first thing out of his mouth was, we got to pitch better, starting pitching in particular. And I think if you squint, you can see this being a regional team just from that standpoint. Zach Thompson on Friday was kind of exactly what you wanted to see. He did have three walks in four innings, and his control would kind of come in. There were specific at-bats where the control would kind of be lost. One of those was the opening batter of the game, so you see that. But he threw everything he had for strikes. The fastball was 89-93, which it was low 40s and drizzly, so that's about as good as you can expect in those kind of conditions. And so you saw the stuff there, that the breaking ball was absolutely devastating. He was throwing it for a strike. He was throwing it in the dirt when he needed to. You just kind of got the sense that when he needed a pitch, he was putting it in the right place. And he got it in a couple small jams, first and third innings. And you could always just kind of see him lock back in and buckle down. Whenever a guy would get into scoring position, that next batter didn't have a chance. So you saw what you needed to see there. Nine strikeouts in those four innings, really dominated throughout much of that game. Certainly there wasn't really any hard contact. The only hit he allowed was a chopper infield single in the first inning, and that was it. Otherwise, he dominated there. And I really liked what I saw from Jimmy Ramsey in the second spot, a big 6'9 righty. That is just an uncomfortable at-bat. He comes at you with a lot of knees and elbows, that tough angle, you know, from the light tower, essentially. But he was in complete command, throughout the game. He ended up with eight strikeouts himself in five innings. His stuff is not quite as electric as Zach Thompson, but he was really, really consistent with it. And then they went with a freshman and Dylan Marsh on Sunday, and I wasn't there for the Sunday game, but he was outstanding as well. Just two hits and a run in four innings, no walks, four strikeouts there. And then Carson Coleman, if you were a little worried that Chris Mockimer isn't there anymore to close out games, I think Carson Coleman is kind of the next addition of that. 3 2/3 innings over the weekend in two different games, six strikeouts, no hits, no walks. It doesn't get any really much cleaner than that. So, that's from the pitching standpoint. Now, they used a bunch of other guys in the bullpen throughout the weekend because a lot of the time their games were in hand. So it kind of remains to be seen what other roles take shape there. But that top four, those three starting pitchers plus Carson Coleman, really gave me a lot of confidence in their ability to compete on the pitching staff. offensively, it's kind of a neat mix. I mean, Kentucky for a long time has kind of been associated with physical offenses going back years now, and I think you're going to see a lot of that still. TJ Collette, of course, is a guy that we know, and he's kind of an easy guy to root for. He struggled with injuries throughout his Kentucky career, but he's kind of a fun player to watch. His teammates clearly have a lot of affection for him. He's, you know, just a really good dude. But he had two absolute rocket home runs over the weekend, one of which was straight down the right field line that never got up, I don't know, more than 15 feet off the ground. It was just an incredible swing of the bat. He had a big weekend with a couple home runs. Dalton Reed is a JUCO transfer at first base who's just got incredible raw power. You could just see it as he walked to the plate, but he had a big weekend. And then Jaron Shelby, is a guy whose name you might recognize there. His brothers, John T. and Javon, played at Kentucky not so long ago. He's kind of the next in line there of the Lexington baseball-playing Shelbys. And he had a big weekend as well, 7-for-14 throughout the weekend. So those guys kind of led the way. But I liked a couple of other guys. Third baseman Braden Daniel and center fielder Cam Hill. Braden Daniel's kind of a versatile infielder who just kind of oozes athleticism. He had a big weekend. And then Cam Hill's a guy, you know, if you like players who kind of go all out in everything they do, Cam Hill's kind of your guy. He stole a few bases over the weekend, legged out a couple extra base hits right at the top of the order. So just kind of a more versatile offense, I think. I mean, there's a lot of different ways they can beat you, and this team has a lot of energy. I mean, that's kind of what I kept coming back to, is it seems a team that is very focused on, like, yeah, last year happened, but it was just kind of a speed bump, this is still a program that in the long term has momentum, in the wider view has momentum, and I think they're going to be a team that other teams are going to have to deal with in the SEC. Now, the issue is, and we've talked about this with a program like Tennessee, is somebody's got to lose games in the SEC. And, you know, we have them on the outside, Kentucky, that is, on the outside looking in on the field of 64, and it's just such a tough uphill climb. So I don't know that it's in the cards necessarily that they're going to get there, but I came out of the weekend feeling like it's not necessarily a blind leap of faith to think that they could get there. So I came away pretty impressed. Again, you know, there were some things that, you know, worked against them, the weather and just being on the road, but they took care of business in the opening weekend like you would have hoped to see from them, to have confidence in that. So I'm kind of eager to see what they do the rest of the season, because I do think they can get there. It's just going to be a real tough road.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting rebuild to an extent, reload, whatever, after they lost so many players last year.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting to see how Minj pieces that together. You know, both offensively and defensively, because outside of Zach Thompson and Jimmy Ramsey, like, I have a feeling a lot of jobs are still open. You know, they have options behind a lot of these guys. So it'll be interesting to watch Kentucky moving forward. Now, we've covered a lot of ground here on the podcast so far, and it may seem like there's not more, but there's plenty more. There are 300 Division I college baseball teams. We could talk forever, but I want to just give us all an opportunity here to shout out, you know, a player, a program, someone, or a couple someones who had, you know, caught your eye this week, who did something that maybe has flown under the radar, but is deserving of a mention here. So, Dave, who caught your eye this weekend around the country?
Well, I know that people are going to probably accuse me of home cooking, but I am going to stay close to home. First off, the player that stood out for me was West Virginia's right-handed pitcher, junior Alec Manoah. In a loss against Kennesaw State, he went 6 innings, 13 strikeouts, but probably more importantly for me and probably scouts around the country, was 0 walks. And I guess it was a dominating performance. Unfortunately for Alec, the bullpen cost up or gave up the lead late for a 5-3 loss, but gave up one earned run, gave up 5 hits in 6 innings, but 13 strikeouts and 0 walks. So he's the player that stood out for me. The team, again, staying close to home, kind of goes under the radar against Appalachian State. The University of Tennessee's pitching staff gave up 0 runs over the course of the weekend. No runs for the first time in school history of not giving up a run in a weekend series. So kudos to the pitchers and the pitching staff led by Frank Anderson at the University of Tennessee. And then lastly, because it's where I come from, I'd like to give a shout out to all the coaches in their first game, getting their first win at a new program. I want to especially highlight Benny Orloff, my former player. getting win number one in the second game of a doubleheader against the University of Washington, one of many to come his way. And then also want to recognize Jim Schlossnagel winning game 650 on Saturday night, and Kevin O'Sullivan winning game 500 this weekend. He was the fastest ever to reach 500 as a head coach at the University of Florida. So good job by all those people.
Absolutely. And Orloff's Anteaters came back after losing that first game of the doubleheader to Washington. They had their opener rained out on Friday night, pushed back to Saturday. They lose the first one, and they come back. They win the next two games, and the game on Sunday, they had a nice comeback in the late innings there against the Huskies to claim a big series win. And the Eaters are off and running here in 2019, definitely a team to watch in the Big West. Joe, what do you got?
Got a couple here. They're going to be very on brand for me. They're pretty off the radar. But one is Illinois State, not just sweeping Belmont and head coach Steve Holmes' first weekend, but scoring 51 runs doing so. Now, you might have heard a little bit about this series because it was kind of going around college baseball Twitter on Friday, just kind of marveling at the fact that they had an extra inning game against Belmont where they scored 16 runs in the 11th inning. So that was pretty incredible. But they really showed good offense throughout the weekend. Like I said, scoring 51 runs all told. So that's a heck of a way for Holm to begin his career at Illinois State. And maybe Illinois State may be a little bit of a sneaky team in the Missouri Valley Conference. The talent is pretty good there. John Rave is a guy you may have heard of. He's kind of a big 2019 draft guy. And they've got some arms there as well. So they're kind of a team I'm interested to watch as the season goes on. One of the others is the University of Portland. They won 3 of 4 at Hawaii, a Hawaii team that we know can pitch pretty well, if nothing else. So that's a big series win for them. Portland's a program that's been building kind of slowly but surely under Jeff Loomis. This is a program that won 23 games last year, which is the most they had won since 2012. You know, the West Coast Conference is one of those leagues where they all kind of beat up on each other a little bit. So it's another league where it is kind of a hard climb to kind of separate yourself. So Portland's still got some building to do to be up near the top of that league, but certainly getting more competitive. And I think winning 3 of 4 against Hawaii is a good step in that direction.
Well, if we're all going to stay on brand, so will I. Let's start it with Ball State right-hander Dre Jamison, who kind of thrust into Friday night duty against Stanford, the number 7 team in the country. You know, he went out and threw 6 no-hit innings, and he did allow an unearned run, a couple walks, but he struck out 9. A really nice start for Jamison, who is a draft-eligible sophomore, and he has a huge arm. He's a little on the short side. They list him at 6 feet tall. He's not 6 feet tall. But he's a power arm that Ball State has there in their rotation, and it'll be interesting to watch as Ball State's rotation develops. Kyle Nicholas did not throw particularly well against Grand Canyon, and John Baker is a little banged up. But if they can get that going, the Cardinals, a team to watch in the MAC. And then also, Southern, Carrick Jackson in his second season taking over that program. They went 3-0 in the Andre Dawson Classic down in New Orleans. They beat Florida A&M, Grambling State, and Alcorn State. And Southern's a team that was just 9-33 a year ago. They didn't have a winning weekend. And now here they are starting off with a sweep to start 2019. So I think the Jaguars, you know, Carrick inherited a program that had some issues in terms of APR stuff, and he's going to do a good job there. And I think this weekend, you know, could be the start of something exciting down there. And you know, to have a 3-0 start after what they went through last year, I think is a very encouraging sign for the Jaguars. All right, so that brings us to the end of our podcast here. We've covered an awful lot of ground, and there's plenty more over at baseballamerica.com. If you still need your college baseball fix to be filled, you can see the top 25 poll in its entirety. My off the bat column is posted with its roundup of things around the country from the weekend, focusing on Stanford, TCU, and Connecticut. We'll have plenty more throughout the week. Leading up to next week, and then there will be a whole new top 25 on Monday, and we'll do this all over again. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast so that it you don't have to do anything to find it. It just rolls into your favorite podcasting device. And while you're there, if you can leave us a review or rate us, we certainly appreciate that as well. as long as it's a positive review, of course. Hopefully we've earned that today. So remember to do that and to check out everything at baseballamerica.com. And we will be back next week with another edition of the Baseball America podcast. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, Dave. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you later.